walks like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animal, talking animal. Must be an animal. Come hear the animals. Talking animals. Talking animal.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest today is Ed Stewart, the co-founder and president of the Performing Animal Welfare Society, or PAWS. PAWS is currently marking its 30th anniversary of advocating and providing sanctuary for abandoned, abused, and retired performing animals and victims of the exotic animal trade. PAWS operates three sanctuaries in California, including the 2,300-acre ARC 2000, which houses 21 tigers, 11 elephants, as well as bears, lions, and other animals. PAWS has long pursued advocacy and educational efforts, and earlier this month organized the 2014 International Captive Wildlife Conference, a three-day summit in Burbank devoted to a slew of lectures, panels, discussions, debates, and more. Full disclosure, I moderated a panel at that conference. We'll discuss various aspects of the PAWS operation when we speak with Ed Stewart in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Later in the show, we'll speak briefly with Rayanna Sachs, founder of the Little Cat Rescue, who will update us on its unintentional transition, at least temporarily, from rescue to sanctuary. Little Cat Rescue also has an event coming up on Sunday. Also towards the end of the show is the prize for Name That Animal Tune. I'll be offering up a pair of tickets to see jazz musician Gregory Porter performing at the Stratt Center on December 18th, in part because there are some 20 tigers at the PAWS Sanctuary. I thought for our opening tune, our opening animal song, we should hear this one. It's Buck Owens with I've Got a Tiger by the Tail Now on Talking Animals.
I've got a tiger by the tail, it's plain to see. I won't be much when you get through with me. Well, I'm a losing weight and I'm turning mighty pale. Looks like I've got a tiger by the tail. Well, I thought the day I met you, you were meek as a lamb, just the kind to fit my dreams and plans. Now the pace we're living takes the wind from my sails, and it looks like I've got a tiger by the tail. I've got a tiger by the tail, it's plain to see. I won't be much when you get through with me. Well, I'm a losing weight and I'm turning mighty pale. Looks like I've got a tiger by the tail. Lights are found. There ain't no way to slow you down. I'm about as helpless as a leaf in a gale, and it looks like I've got a tiger by the tail. I've got a tiger by the tail, it's plain to see. I won't be much when you get through with me. Well, I'm a losing weight and I'm turning mighty pale. Looks like I've got a tiger by the tail.
That was Buck Owens with I've Got a Tiger by the Tail, a zippy animal song. Tiger-oriented, obviously. To get us started this morning, let's move directly into today's chat with Ed Stewart about the Performing Animal Welfare Society, or PAWS, with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing us at dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Ed Stewart to Talking Animals. Good morning, Ed.
Morning, Morning, Duncan. How are you doing?
Great. Thanks so much for joining us on Talking Animals. And I know it's bright and early out in California, so thanks all the more for, although I'm sure with the animals you're tending to, this is probably late in the day out there.
No, it's still early by any standard, but yeah. We're always moving around by now.
I'm sure. So I think, as you know, I had the great pleasure of interviewing your late partner, Pat Derby, multiple times on the show, but I'm delighted to have an opportunity to speak with you today. By way of getting started, and because there may be some listeners not familiar with your organization, can I ask you to just sort of at least briefly describe what prompted you and Pat to launch PAWS initially some 30 years ago?
Well, I think we saw a need that wasn't being met as far as animal welfare goes with wild animals in captivity. It seemed like nobody was paying attention to circuses, nobody was paying attention to exotic animal pet ownership, or just roadside zoos. There wasn't a concerted effort to address that issue, and Pat's background, of course, was animal training, and she was just an incredible animal person and worked with wild animals. So, you know, that's why we did it. She had been in the business of commercials and movies and things like that with animals, and she had written a book called The Lady and Her Tiger that was an expose, because it's not a good industry for animals. You would expect the animals that work and make a living for someone else to be the best treated animals, and that's just not the case. So some people came to us and said, hey, things are bad in Hollywood and circuses, and so we formed PAWS.
And it's so interesting, because one of the things I've learned from doing this show is sometimes the most powerful advocates are those that were on an initial side and then sort of saw what that really looked like and how that was for the animals, and then just became one of sort of many redemption tales, and whether it's Rick O'Berry or Pat. And but yeah, I think before we get too much further, just in terms of someone who had a tremendous gift for animals, I just remember the first time I was out at ARC 2000. I think it was just when it was, I don't think it was even, well, I guess it was finished being built, but I don't think there was still more to be done. But the animals were there, and she walked out. This is part of a conference that back then, this is 12 or 15 years ago. And she walked out to where the elephants were, and I think it was 71, the elephant called 71. But that elephant came sprinting towards Pat, the way that you see now on YouTube where a serviceman or a woman comes home from a long stint overseas and the dog goes nuts. I mean, this elephant went nuts in the same way for Pat. And I mean, that's just still one of the most powerful images. I thought, wow, that is something extraordinary. So
Yeah. 71 was a special elephant. She was actually brought over with 63 other babies from Zimbabwe after their whole herd was shot and killed, and she'd been through a lot of trauma, had medical problems, and so we spent a lot of time with her. We slept with her for years. I don't even know, maybe 6 years. We slept in the barn with her just to make sure she was okay. And so there was a pretty tight bond there, and it's funny, we used to have dogs. Dogs, you call them, they wouldn't come. The elephants come from 500 yards away.
Something delightfully backwards about that, but So Ed, over the years from when that first set of circumstances prompted you and Pat to found it, what would you say kind of some of the more significant ways that the mission may have changed?
Well, one of the things that changed, we never really planned on having a sanctuary at all. We planned on just being advocates for animals, because we got to the point where we just hated the fact that animals were in cages, wild animals in cages. You know, big cages, small cages, the ones we have here, which are, you know, sometimes hundreds of acres. But you know, it's to us, it became a black and white issue that wild animals don't belong in a cage. And so we really didn't want to start a sanctuary. Pat had a few of the animals that were still alive from the days when she worked. And, of course, we were taking care of them and had the permits for them. So, you know, since we had the permits, the authorities, the USDA, Fish and Game, County Animal Control would bring us animals. And a lot of times they would say it was on a temporary basis, but many times that turned into 10 or 15 years. So it just developed. And then when 71, the elephant came, whether you like it or not, you have a sanctuary, and you better get moving.
And it's really clear from your story, your and Pat's story, and just even things you told recently at the conference, that sometimes you just find yourself in a situation. I mean, sometimes there's somebody that's gotten you into that situation as a bit of a wink, because they know if you're a softie when it comes to animals, that as soon as they introduce the idea or introduce you to the animal, you're not going to walk away.
Right.
But still, I mean, to what extent are you surprised to find yourself living this life amidst a slew of elephants and tigers and other animals whose lives you saved and vastly improved? But like you say, you didn't really start out to create a sanctuary, but yet here you are. And I guess some of those choices, in a way, were almost made for you.
Right. Yeah, a lot of times I wonder how I got into this, because I never had a dog when I was a kid. I didn't want the responsibility. Now we have 10 elephants and, 25 tigers and bears. I think because, my parents taught me that it was a great responsibility to have an animal. I think they were great animal teachers. They taught you it was a big responsibility instead of just a casual kind of a fun novelty to have in the house. So, when we started taking them, taking the animals, we evolved. I look back at the first enclosures that we built back 30 years ago, and I think, they're empty now, and I just don't even like looking at them because they were so small. And you just, you can't sit still, because there's no, I hear of zoos and places, theme parks that say they're building state-of-the-art enclosures for animals, for tigers and elephants. And I think, there is no state-of-the-art cage. No, state-of-the-art is Zimbabwe.
Yeah, it's being in the wild. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, these animals are meant to have a job in captivity. They're unemployed. They rely on you to have for water, for food, for security. You've taken their whole life away. No matter how nice the area is, you can't, we just can't accept captivity. And every time I see, somebody holding up baby tigers at the end of the news segment, I think, it's going to be 20 years in a cage for those animals, no matter what.
Yeah, because in those trades, you just need more and more fresh baby tigers to keep
That's
the dollars
exactly
coming.
It. Yeah, yeah. We took 39 tigers from one place in California. It was an embarrassment to, the United States and California for sure, that happened in our state. It was 10 years ago. And this just an individual guy who called himself Tiger Rescue, which is always sounds good. There was nothing rescue about him. But he bred 150 tigers. He had 150 tigers. And by the time the USDA and Fish and Game got in there and actually did an investigation, there were 90 dead tigers that had starved to death, and 58 babies in the freezer. And it's just astonishing that kind of thing can happen. One tiger, and this guy had 150 and somehow got away with it. That was one of those wink. Pat, we went down to a fundraiser to help them out, ended up agreeing to take 39 tigers. That's the hardest thing we've ever done.
I'm sure. Well, because I was living in Southern California then, and when the first raid covered in the news, and to people who cared about animals, the thing then was, once they arrested the guy, still there was a facility full of tigers that, through no fault of their own, were there, and then had nobody to care for them. It went from horrible care to like nobody. So they built this huge battalion of volunteers every day and fed them and watered. But I just remember some of the days going out there when it was feeding time and how scary it was. Speaking of enclosures, I mean, those cages, I mean, push your hand through almost. And so,
right. Yeah, that's the first thing I told Pat when we went to look at it. I said, okay, we have to plan on how to load these cats and get them out of there and all the logistics. But I didn't want to stick around there, because they had 500-pound tigers that were angry in cages that absolutely they could have gotten out of at any time they wanted to. This guy didn't meet any regulation, not a USDA regulation, not a Fish and Game state regulation. It boggles my mind how people can get away with things like that, and there are no repercussions and no control. and especially in Southern California, where you figure somebody is paying attention.
Yeah, well, it's kind of an offshoot of what you said earlier in our conversation about people that at least work in entertainment with animals. You think, well, those are going to be pampered and beautifully maintained and fed and best vet care and stuff. And fortunately, the reverse is true. So then you get a step off in the other direction of a guy just cranking out people coming visiting his grounds. And of course, yeah, the baby tigers that people can pet and have their pictures taken with. And he was just like on an assembly line.
Yeah, and that's how they make their money. I mean, there are places that let tigers walk around on you, you know, baby tigers. If there's a place with baby tigers, you know, it's a scam. Just no doubt about it. There are no conservation reason for it. There's no conservation reason, really, to have them in captivity anywhere, even at the best zoos, as far as I can see. But especially roadside zoos or people at a mall or coming into a flea market or anything like that, and they say they're saving tigers, just stay away from them and try to keep other people away because it's... You're promoting exactly the wrong thing.
And some, of course, are so shameless. There's a facility not too far from where I'm talking to you where you probably heard about it over there, I'm sure, but where they have swim with the tiger cub.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. So, I mean, that to see footage of these tiger cubs who are just terrified and they say, oh, yeah, that means they want to kind of hang out with you and cuddle with you. No, they're trying to get out of the water. But anyway.
Where are they going to wind up? You know, where do they go when they're 2 years old and they're not cuddly and they're really dangerous and you can't swim with them, and they're just going to pump out more babies. And anybody who goes to that, you know, I can't imagine that anybody really does that for and thinking that they're doing something for conservation. It's always to get a selfie you know, it's just a personal thing that they want to put on their Facebook or something. But you know, don't do it because that tiger's going to live in a cage, a crummy cage, for 20 years because you're in there taking pictures with it. And there's going to be another one right behind it and another one right behind it.
Well, yeah, no one's going to get in the pool with a year-old or two-year-old tiger, so it's a very short window. This is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, my guest is Ed Stewart, the co-founder and president of the Performing Animal Welfare Society. Pause. If you'd like to ask Ed a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. So, Ed, your work leading PAWS is truly multifaceted. What facet would you say you're kind of most passionate about? What part of the job do you find most rewarding?
You know, the most rewarding is being able to speak to groups that are neutral. You know, like a big, 2 days ago I went to the University of California, Davis, and they had a conference over there, and I was invited to come and talk, and it was mostly philosophers and you know, educators from universities all over the country, and sometimes people don't have any idea about the realities of the captive wildlife world, and you can really open their eyes, especially people like that who are the thinkers and the writers and the teachers, you know, around the country, and that was really rewarding, and then they get it, you know, they understand it. It's a black and white issue, you know, and it's, you know, why I think every animal that's in a cage, we have to look at that animal and say, why is this individual in this cage? And I can't think of any good reasons right now. Even elephants, you know, elephants, there's no reason to have elephants in captivity. Their habitat is disappearing so fast, and they're being poached so fast in Africa. You know, the problem isn't that they don't know how to breed. They know how to breed. They just don't have anywhere to live. We have to, you know, we came up with the term endangered species about, I don't know, 70 years ago or 50 years ago. And endangered species really doesn't mean anything. It gives people carte blanche to breed tigers and breed elephants and tell people they're doing a great thing. But really what we should have come up with is endangered habitat, because if we were focusing on the habitat, maybe we would be getting somewhere. But that's too hard, and, you know, you can't sell a ticket to conservation. You can only sell a ticket to swim with the tigers. So it's not glamorous, and it's a hard issue because it's economics. Usually there's money involved, like poaching is money. The Chinese building big roads through Kenya and destroying habitat, and the U.S. doing everything we've done for, you know, last 100 years around the world to destroy habitat. I mean, that's where the problem is. We have to start looking at that. Breeding an animal and putting it in a cage is not saving anything.
So that brings us to a pretty interesting point that is an ongoing discussion. Certainly was there was some spirited discussion around this at the conference recently. And that's the whole idea of conservation and what that means and how that term, I guess, can be used depending on, you know, what side of the philosophical gulf you're on, like to justify, I guess, any number of things.
Right. Well, you know, in the zoo world, the term used to be conservation, that they were involved in conservation. Then they kind of dropped that term and started talking about conservation education, which is totally different. You know, everyone knows that the animals in a zoo are, unless it's a slug, a snail, a frog, or something that you can easily put back in the wild, that most of the animals, 99.9%, are going to live and die in a captivity. And their offspring, you know, elephants are going to live and die every time they're born, their whole life, 50 years, in a fence. There's no release program. There's nobody who's even planning a release. So, you know, now they've gone to conservation education, which means when a child comes into the zoo, that you inspire them to save elephants in the wild. And, you know, if somebody gave me $1 million today, I'm not sure even what I would do to save an elephant in the wild. It's a complex issue. You can help the people that are there. That's what I would do, is help the people in Amboseli and places around Africa and Asia to try to save habitat. That's all you can do. You know, give them some funds. That's what I always tell people to do.
And that's goes back to your point that the wrong phrase or the wrong emphasis is really coming up in these conversations, which is, again, really should be habitat, and the rest kind of falls in line behind
right.
that.
I think at some point we, you know, the way we're destroying, you know, elephants are kind of the hot issue right now, but the way we're letting them be just destroyed in the world right now, I'm not sure we even deserve to have an elephant in this world with us. I mean, elephants are the most incredible thing on earth, and look what we do to them. If you take a kid to the zoo and ask them about an elephant, you know, is this an Asian or an African elephant? They can't tell you that. So we're not really getting anywhere. They can tell you everything about a dinosaur. They've never seen a dinosaur. They've never seen one stand on its head in a circus arena, but they can tell you where they walked, where they ate, when they went extinct, you know, how they moved, you know, because they study and investigate. And really, that's, you can do that with any animal. You can learn anything you want to learn, much more than standing in front of a barren enclosure watching an elephant sway back and forth. It's pretty sad. I think in 50 years, or hopefully 20 years, we're going to look back and think, I just can't believe we used to keep animals in cages, you know, wild animal, an elephant on a chain for a circus. It just seems so out of place with the world right now.
So, Ed, how do we, in your view, steer things from the kid who knows everything about dinosaurs, as you say, but obviously has never seen a dinosaur, but is passionate and fascinated and full of knowledge about them? How do we steer that situation to becoming the same kind of thing for an elephant, which in the meantime is obviously sort of a big marquee draw at the zoos that still have them, and God forbid, at the circuses that still use them?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the first thing that we do with captivity. You know, I mean, the word captivity has pretty negative connotations. So captivity is already bad. And when you go to, and I don't like to pick on zoos because they're the least of the problem. You know, I mean, private people, circuses, roadside zoos are the worst. But when a child goes to the zoo and sees a tiger behind a fence, the tiger's not, you don't have to respect that tiger. I went to the L.A. Zoo and stood in front of the lion cage, and which was pretty dismal, and I saw these school kids and their teachers screaming at this lion and laughing, and it was so loud, and the lion urinated, and everybody laughed, and I thought, you know, this is the, you know what is what's creating this whole situation is the fence. The fence allows you to disrespect animals. You know, you can throw things at them, you can yell at them, you can turn your back on them. With no fence, you know, if you go to India and a kid is walking and there's a tiger, and they live around areas that have tigers, those tigers have incredible respect. I mean, those people have incredible respect for all the animals, the elephants, the tigers. They know what they are. They realize they're dangerous and they need their space. You go to a zoo, all that's gone. You can't teach anybody anything if you take away the substance of the animal, and that's what you do. It's funny because they have also places at the L.A. Zoo that say beware of, you know, rattlesnake area. And in the rattlesnake, when you walk through that area, you can see people actually being careful and respecting the rattlesnakes if they happen to be around. There's no cage there. The cage is a horrible thing, and I think it immediately just engenders disrespect.
Wow, that's really interesting because it sounds like there's cultural issues and just something as simple as simple but complex in terms of its meaning, offense. And yeah. what and just how that alters perceptions and behavior in all kinds of ways.
Right. You can see it. If you go to a zoo and you just, you know, they release 50 kids off the school bus and they go screaming through the zoo and the teachers can't control them and it's like mayhem. You know, if there were no fences and those same animals were there, they wouldn't be running through the zoo. They'd stay on the bus.
So Ed, in a way, this kind of brings me to that, along with your comments, too, about sort of comparing the kid that nuts and knowledgeable and passionate about dinosaurs, and obviously haven't spent any time with an actual dinosaur. Mm-hmm. In one panel at the recent conference that sort of dealt with replacing wild animals in entertainment, producer Cristina Calissimo unveiled plans for this sort of 4D, so-called immersive experience that seeks to replace the zoo experience, which he imagines at least as being a touring production patterned after Cirque du Soleil, first of which will recreate elephants in the wild, where you would go and you would really have something, I guess, quite comparable to being out there with elephants in the wild. What was your reaction to what she outlined?
Oh, I think technology is definitely the future of education for wild animals. You don't have to have one sitting in a cage. You can give an experience to anybody, anywhere, through technology. I think her idea I hadn't heard it before, but I think not only is it a good idea, it sounds like a good investment. I mean, I think, which is always good, you know, somebody can make some money from that and educate and make it successful. I really think kids now, with all the technology, all the iPhones and all the iPads and everything else, the computers that they're on all the time, and everything is fast and everything is technology. I think seeing an elephant standing in a zoo, I think that it's over. It's over. It's dull. If you look at people, they stand there for 15 seconds and want to leave because there's nothing going on. And with that technology that she's coming up with, I've always thought that would be a good idea, and I was hoping somebody would do something similar to that. So it was really great to find her and realize that it's actually in the works. I think once it happens, it's like Cirque du Soleil. You know, once Cirque du Soleil came out, it went everywhere because it was so popular. Circuses with animals are fading away. I mean, the only reason they're still touring is because the big circus mogul in this country thinks that tradition is a big thing, and he wants to drag elephants and animals around in the back of trains and trucks to, for his own enjoyment. But But actually, the best circuses now, by far, are the human circuses. So I think she's onto something.
For sure. Well, this might be a good time to mention one of our emailers asked me to mention that despite an online petition with 3,000 signatures, Mixon Farms in Bradenton has refused to cancel the Loomis Brothers Circus on their grounds this weekend. Protests will be at 9 a.m., 11 a.m., and 2 p.m., presumably geared for the showtimes. For more information on this, if you want to get involved, you can call Amy at 813-230-8778. And again, my guest is Ed Stewart, the co-founder and president of the Performing Animal Welfare Society, or PAWS. We invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. So in some ways, all this conversation about zoos, and sort of as another way to examine the scope and complexity of some of PAWS' work over the years, maybe we should spend a few minutes talking about the Toronto Zoo elephants, meaning three elephants that had been living at the Toronto Zoo that ultimately ended up living at PAWS R2000 Sanctuary in Northern California. But ultimately is sort of the operative word here. This became sort of a protracted international story. So maybe you could recount some of the key chapters of that saga, Ed, and partly because it's just so rooted in, the important question of, do elephants ever belong at zoos, and if so, under what circumstances?
Well, I think they don't belong in zoos under any circumstances, and they don't belong here. I mean, you know, I see it every day. They shouldn't be here. They shouldn't be in circuses, and they definitely shouldn't be in captivity at all, because you can't satisfy their needs. And we have a lot of the same situations that zoos have. You know, we have old elephants. We have elephants with sometimes bad feet, bad joints, and it's all a product of being in captivity. And the Toronto elephants, I actually try to forget that.
Okay. Well, we don't have to.
No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
No, it was a 3-year ordeal. It was a long, drawn-out affair, and it was mostly a fight between the city of Toronto, who wanted to send the elephants here, and the zoo, and the AZA, the Zoo Association, that wanted to send them somewhere else, anywhere but here. And it turned into just an incredible fight. We didn't have much time to fight. I mean, at that time, Pat was sick, and had cancer, and we're fighting through that and running our place. So Julie Woodyer from Zoo Check Canada up in Toronto led the charge, and it was just outrageous how crazy it was. You know, all we said was, if you decide to send them here, we'll take them, and we'll do our best. I mean, they have a couple of the elephants are old for captivity, not old for the wild, but old for captivity. A lot of elephants, especially African elephants, have passed away this year, and all have been younger than the oldest one that we have here. So, you know, what we try to do is, and all we ever said was, we're going to give them a chance to at least act like an elephant. You know, they can go out and they can climb a hill, they can rub on a tree, they can eat some branches, eat grass, sleep on the side of the hill. It sounds simple, but in captivity, most elephants can't do that. You know, most places where you go, it's a flat, barren place, not one tree, not one piece of grass. So it's a nice place. I mean, we have a nice place for elephants, and all we did was make an offer, and all hell broke loose. And the circus was driving it. You know, the circus is really our biggest enemy, and they are sort of running the show when it comes to captive elephants, because they have so many. And so anytime there's an elephant fight, you guarantee that behind the fight, there's the circus is pushing it.
Yeah, it really seemed like that was a theme that was underscored at the conference, that, well, they're flipping it around the other way. One question that kept coming up is, why don't zoos sort of distance themselves from circuses? And you sort of already answered it in front with financial and other impact that the circuses wield, I guess, in that world. But I guess, yeah, it ended up, I mean, passions were just so inflamed with this. I mean, I talked about a lot on the show, and I have family in Toronto who would send down the coverage and stuff, and it's like, oh my God. I mean, just it just got so nuts, and you know, you guys were being attacked. Bob Barker, who said, hey, I'll pay for it if you don't want to put him in trucks, you know, and no matter what, people said, no, that's not good. No, we're not doing that, and that's not. It just seemed like any good solution was immediately refused, and people were just so, like, angry about it.
Yeah, there was more to it than just on the... Because the city council, I think, voted 34 to 7 or 37 to 4 to send them to us. And so some of the fight was just governance of the zoo between the city and the zoo. They had a pretty big fight. And we got kind of caught in the middle of the unions and the city, and of course, the mayor at that time was a little odd. So it was a circus, I guess. It wasn't a zoo. In that case, it was a circus.
Yeah, no kidding. Thing is, I mean, it seemed like what initially prompted this, and again, maybe there was a whole part of the story before that I wasn't privy to, but someone at some point finally realized, hey, you know what? Toronto isn't a good place to have elephants.
Well, the zoo actually voted, you know, they came up with the policy to send the elephants away. It wasn't a matter of sending them away. It was a matter of where to send them.
Mm-hmm.
Because they had voted a long time before that they didn't want to spend the money to make a bigger enclosure, and they knew that it was too cold in Toronto. So I think it wasn't a matter of sending them out. It was a matter of where to send them. And there's a big fight. We're anti-captivity, and the AZA doesn't like that. They don't like the fact that we're trying to level the playing field and just get people to think about it. You know, if you go somewhere, if I go somewhere, I've worked with elephants and these animals for almost 40 years, but if I go somewhere and start to talk to the media, the zoos, the AZA will say I'm an animal extremist. They won't give me any credit for actually shoveling up poop for 40 years and being around the elephants and taking blood and trimming feet and everything else we do here. But they can marginalize you and the people that are going to be protesting, like, what did you say, in Bradenton?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're going to marginalize those people. They're not real American citizens. They're animal extremists. And I think the public is starting to see through that. I think the animal extremists are pretty mainstream American people who are right about this subject, and I think everybody else is going to come around.
Well, I like the optimism, that's for sure. And we're just sort of nearing the end of our time, but I've got an emailer here. It says, I grew up in the 50s and 60s across the river from Lowry Park Zoo, and comparing it then and now, the change is incredible. When I was a kid, the place was a horror show. As much as it has impressively improved, I still hate seeing these beautiful animals in the enclosures. And of course, one of the things that also came up at the conference was sort of a case study of elephants from Swaziland about 10 years ago, I guess it was, being sold both to San Diego Zoo's Wild Animal Park and to Lowry Park Zoo, and just sort of, again, the behind the scenes, and probably not even everything behind the scenes, but just what the glimpse that we were offered was pretty disturbing about.
Yeah. You know, the danger is that now zoos are running out of animals, because they're not breeding, and the old elephants, you know, they don't breed at the ages they should breed. They stop. Thank God they shut down their reproductive systems early in captivity, because I think they know how bad it is. You know, if there's a drought, you don't breed. If there's a war, you don't breed. If there's captivity, you don't breed. So now they're doing artificial insemination, which is a horror show on these poor things. And so they're going to start looking to cases like Swaziland, where the elephants could have remained there, and say, we're rescuing these animals. You know, we're helping them out. They have to have somewhere to go. We're kind of like a sanctuary, and they're going to try to keep their numbers up. I think people in cities have to just let their city and their zoo director know that, look, you know, at least elephants, let's not put them in. There's no way to satisfy their needs. I mean, there's absolutely no way. So let's start with elephants and then take a look at everything else. I mean, I hate to see a raccoon or a hamster or anything in a cage. You know, it's just, I don't know, maybe I have an overabundance of empathy. I just think, you know, we're all about freedom in this country, and we slam animals in California into tiny, tiny cages for movies. Doesn't make any sense.
Well, I got to say, Ed, you're sounding a little bit like an animal extremist right now. But
I have the right.
Yeah,
after
exactly.
40 years of elephant poop, I can say
yeah,
anything I want.
You definitely have earned the right. So, Ed, we're at the end of our time now, but we've been speaking with Ed Stewart, co-founder and president of the Performing Animal Welfare Society, and the website is pawsweb.org. They're also on Facebook, very easy to search. So, Ed, thanks so much for making the time to join us and all your great work over all these many years of scooping up elephant poop and who knows what other kinds of stuff, and just appreciate your great work and the fact that you have great optimism about what the future holds.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Duncan.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
In a moment, we'll have a brief chat with Rayanna Sachs, founder of the Little Cat Rescue, about a few things, including a fundraiser happening Sunday. Right now, let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner. My wife and son were talking about Harry Potter the other morning, which reminded me of this piece. This is from a guy named Matt Bronger, and this is from his Letterman debut a couple years ago. On the Comedy Corner, Talking Animals.
Anyway, Harry Potter. Like, I like them. I like the books. I like the movies. But I think they send the wrong message to our kids. And that's that it's okay to own an owl for a pet. No. Okay? I'm from Oregon. I know. Owls are made of claws, feathers, and hatred. That's it. Like, owls don't give a crap. You ever look at an owl? The rage and hatred in his eyes? Up in a tree, like, who's next to die? It's you, mouse. Wow. And I'm back hating everything that lives. Hey. It's kind of like 101 Dalmatians. You remember when that movie came out and all the kids wanted Dalmatians for Christmas? Even though the Dalmatians are the most insane dog in dog land. They are. You throw a stick to a Dalmatian and come back with his own leg torn off. Yeah. Is that what you threw? I didn't even look. Ha ha, Dalmatian. They yell their own name like Geronimo. I mean, that's why firemen have them. They're the only animal that'll run in a burning house like it's a regular house. You know? God, you crazy dog. Go inside. See if there's a baby. Okie doke. I'm back and on fire for some reason. Is that a baby? That's a loaf of bread. How are you alive?
That was Matt Bronger with a piece called Owls, moving into his piece on Dalmatians, taken from his Letterman debut. I'm Duncan Strauss. Right now, to hear a bit about the Little Cat Rescue at the moment, let's welcome Rayanna Sachs back to Talking Animals. Good morning, Rayanna.
Good morning, Duncan. I hope you're staying warm.
Yeah, I'm trying. Boy, it's
I like it, actually. I love it.
It's refreshing, for sure. So let's jump in. We don't have much time, so let's just to review, but for those listening who may not be familiar, let's just start with a quick sort of overview of what the Little Cat Rescue is and what it does.
Little Cat Rescue was founded about 13 years ago. We did rescue, rehabilitate, and rehome. In these years, we've rehomed over 1,000 cats. We are a very small, all-volunteer organization. Because we've got so many, well, we've got 49 cats that have not been adopted over the years, and we did lose our adoption sin at one of the pet stores. So we've got cats that we've got are very adoptable, but we have many that are special needs cats. They're older, they have issues. And basically, we're looking at them as lifers, and we really could use some sponsors for these wonderful cats. Once in a while, are able to rescue one here and there. Just took one off of animal control in Hillsboro, 7-year-old beautiful little girl.
Right, but it sounds like you're tapped out legally at the number that you have there. Meanwhile, they aren't being adopted from you, so you're stuck.
That's correct. We have been given the legal limit of 50 cats, and of course, animal control just does pop in checks on you to make sure when you're a partner. And I can't even tell you how many calls a day to please save these kittens and this cat. It breaks my heart. I cry practically every time I hang up the phone. Because I can't take them, and I'm running out of options of where to tell them to go. there's just no hope, it seems, for these guys.
And why is it that they're just the cats particularly are difficult cases for adoption? Why are they not being? I know one of the things you mentioned, sort of almost in passing, which we maybe should come back to, is that an adoption center that you had, you no longer have. But why are not more of those being adopted into new homes?
Well, like you said, we don't have the adoption center anymore at one of the local pet stores, which we did have for 10 years. A new manager came in, and she wanted us to drastically relax our adoption policies. And we don't just hand them out to anybody, throw them to the wind, and hope they stick. We do our due diligence. We do our due diligence to make sure they're going to a good home. Right now, our only outlet is the Internet, Facebook, word of mouth, and previous adopters. But everyone is having a hard time adopting out cats. In fact, the SPCA up here has completely closed down their adoption center. They are no longer dealing with cats at all. There's just everybody's got cats, and they're being born like in droves, and people are giving them up because whatever. I'm allergic. My boyfriend doesn't like, you know, whatever reason. These cats. I just saw a beautiful 12-year-old cat dumped off at animal control. Perfectly healthy, beautiful cat. It's sad. It's very sad. But the guys that are here, the cats that are here, no matter how long, they will be here living a happy, healthy life for the rest of their lives if they're not put down. I mean, if not put down, if they're not adopted. We don't put them down because they're not adoptable or because they have litter box issues, which I've got several of those. They deserve to live. I'll just walk around with a paper towel and a spray bottle in my hands.
So it sounds like once they're there, ideally, they will be adopted. But you're saying if they're not, they've got a home for life, and hopefully
correct.
Until such time that they're adopted. So, right. So Rihanna, with that in mind, I mean, what would you say the Little Cats Rescue needs most? Donations, volunteers, obviously adoptions fundamentally. But what if someone's listening and saying, oh my goodness, this sounds rough. What can I do to help? What are some of the key ways that somebody could step up and help?
Well, as you said, we do need adoptions. We could use some foster homes. We desperately need donations. I mean, these guys, as they get older, their veterinary needs increase. In fact, we just spent over $5,000 on surgeries, mostly oral surgeries, for the cats that needed it. And those were through generous donors. So obviously donations are needed. If there's a lot of different ways to help, and the best way to find out is just give me a call at 727-359-9629. I like the old-fashioned way. Call me. We'll talk voice to voice.
Oh, that's good. And meanwhile, if someone's online, like listening right now, for example, they could also go to the website, The Little Cats, and that's plural, Cats Rescue, thelittlecatsrescue.org.
Right.
And,
they
get
have
more.
To put the in.
Right. You got to put the, and you got to put the S after cat. So
correct.
It's thelittlecatsrescue.org. So
and
let's.
On Facebook, too. Facebook is the best place.
Actually. Yeah, absolutely. So the Little Cats Rescue on Facebook. Should also, before we run out of time, mention this cool upcoming event that you guys have on the 23rd.
It's going to be so much fun. I've never been to this restaurant, but I hear a lot of good things about it. It's Hamburger Mary's, and for us vegans, don't get upset. They do have a vegan menu, a few items. It's going to be this Sunday at 7 o'clock. It's called Drag Queen Bingo. And all the proceeds of the bingo cards will go to the Little Cats Rescue. They do have a full bar, a good menu, and as I said, they do have some vegan choices. It's Sunday. It's on US 19 in Clearwater. And their phone number is 727-400-6996. And it is recommended that you do call and make a reservation.
Right, yeah, I'm glad you clarified, because I was about to, that it's the Clearwater location, since there's a few of these, and they all now offer, seems like, the Drag Queen Bingo, which is really, really fun. WNF just did one recently. I actually stumbled into one accidentally with my little boy a few years ago before it sort of became as popular, and it was hilarious, but it made for some interesting dinner conversation with him.
I'm sure.
But anyway, so again, this has been Rihanna Sachs. It's the Little Cats Rescue. Again, thelittlecatsrescue.org. They're on Facebook. Again, anything you can do to help out, if you're thinking, hey, you know, we're thinking about adding a cat to our family, how about getting one from the Little Cats Rescue or just helping out in any other way? So go to the website, go to the Facebook page, go to Hamburger Mary's in Clearwater on Sunday, and that would be great. So thanks, Rihanna, for all your great work for all our little cat friends.
Thank you, Duncan, for all you do. Really appreciate it.
Okay, take care now. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
As the prize for Name That Animal Tune, I'll be offering a pair of tickets to see jazz musician Gregory Porter performing at the Stras Center on December 18th. We'll get to that in a moment here on Talk Animals. Right now, I just want to do at least a quick few animal news and announcements. A few things coming up on Saturday, November 22nd, including a sale/fundraiser to benefit manatees. Temple Terrace Women's Club is holding a fundraiser sale in the Woodmont Clubhouse at 415 Florida. That's in Woodmont Avenue in Temple Terrace, and all proceeds will be donated to Save the Manatee Club. That's from 8 till noon, Saturday only. And also Pup Pals Reading Dogs, this Saturday again, the 22nd, from 10 a.m. to noon. Kids 5 to 12 can read to therapy-trained dogs, and also meet local author June Allard Berti to see original illustrations from her book, DOG. That's at Largo Public Library, again, this Saturday, from 10 a.m. to noon. Also, the 12th Annual Village Fest is happening, Carrollwood Village, the soccer fields, 13-13420 South Village Drive in Tampa. And at South Village Drive at Casey Lowell Roads, it'll be live music, arts and crafts, adoptable animals of all kinds, cool games and fun for the kids. So that's, again, this Saturday, the 22nd, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., Carrollwood Village Soccer Fields. I think that's going to have to do it. We're going to hold off on, let's see. Oh, I want to be sure to mention Thanks Vegan next Thursday, Thanksgiving Day. Delicious potluck-style feasts and fun, open to everyone, 1:30 to 5:30. Held at Unitarian Universalist Church of Tampa, 11400 Morris Bridge Road, just off I-75 Temple Terrace. Sponsored by Florida Voices for Animals. To RSVP, volunteer. For more information, you can go to thanksvegan.com or just look them up on Facebook at Tampa Thanks Vegan Dinner. And that's definitely going to do it for us today. We're not going to get to Name That Animal Tune today, but we'll do it next week, and we'll still offer those tickets next week. So, anyways, I'm Duncan Strauss. The website is talkinganimals.net. Links to Facebook, Twitter, and more. And we'll see you next Wednesday on Talking Animals. This is WMNF Tampa, Clearwater, Largo, Weeki Wachee, Community Conscious Radio.